Hello and welcome. Air freight has given the aviation sector a much-needed shot in the arm, with passenger traffic virtually at a standstill. I'm Chubby Jerram Singh, and I produce business stories for MoneyMind, a program on CNA. The arrival of the COVID-19 vaccine is also likely to help prop up cargo demand. But will vaccine transportation be enough of a lifeline for the cash-strapped aviation industry? I'll be looking at the five things you need to know about the aviation industry in 2021. Joining me now is Jeffrey Goh, Chief Executive Officer of Global Airline Alliance, Star Alliance Services, and Brendan Sobey, Founder Sobey Aviation. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me on this program, Chubby.
Thank you. Nice joining today.
Jeffrey, let's start with you. How much of an impact will vaccine transportation have on the aviation sector? We know, for example, Singapore wants to become a COVID-19 vaccine distribution hub for the region.
I think there are two points to say to this, Chubby. To begin with, the arrival of the vaccine is a very welcome and positive development, not just for the aviation industry, but I think globally as we try to restart the global economy. I mean, there's no doubt that whilst aviation has been the first to be hit by this crisis, it will also be the last to come out of it. The aviation industry can support the distribution of the vaccine, whether it's the hub in Singapore or anywhere else, that can only be a positive development. The handling of some of these vaccines requires delicate, tender care, storage at significant temperatures below zero. Therefore, in terms of logistics, in terms of storage, in terms of handling, to the extent that the aviation industry can support that, whether through the actual operation of transportation or storage in a hub such as that in Changi in Singapore, all of that is really a positive thing to look forward to.
The vaccine represents the end of this pandemic eventually, so it's very important, like Jeffrey was saying, for aviation and for the overall economy. And with the overall economy recovering eventually, people will travel again and aviation can recover along with it. However, the vaccination is not an overnight thing. It's a long-term recovery that it enables, generally speaking. From a cargo perspective, transporting the vaccine is very important. Airlines are certainly going to benefit from it, not only financially, but just from a marketing perspective, because they're playing a critical role in getting the vaccines distributed, which in turn will eventually get us out of this pandemic. However, revenue benefit is relatively limited. The reason is the vaccines account for a very, very small portion of overall cargo. They're very light. For example, the entire Singapore population can be vaccinated with a couple of 747s worth of vaccines. So we're not talking about a large volume of cargo. Even when you look at the global numbers, it's relatively small. There are a lot of airports that would like to become vaccination distribution centers. It remains to be seen how much that will play out. Most of the vaccine, I believe, will be shipped directly from the manufacturer to the countries that have acquired the vaccines. The reason being, the preference would be always for direct flights. Like in Asia, some of the more emerging or pioneer economies, it's about getting the vaccine, into the villages. Probably most of the vaccine will be flown directly to the market.
Brendan, aside to vaccine transportation, which is important but still a very small fraction in terms of overall revenue contribution, how important is air freight and is it enough to keep airlines afloat?
Cargo continues to be very important because the volume of belly capacity that's available is very, very small because of the number of international flights is down so heavily. So what's happening is the rates for cargo, and this is all kinds of cargo, has increased significantly. And special flights have to be chartered, sometimes using passenger aircraft. And of course, the available freighters are very heavily utilized right now in terms of the freighter fleet. And then passenger aircraft are being used many cases for cargo-only flights. And then you have a lot of flights that are flying right now with very few passengers, like Singapore Airlines, average load factor is 12-13%, but the cargo is very important. And on a lot of flights, cargo revenue is now more than passenger revenue, which you would have never seen in a normal circumstance.
I would just echo a couple of those points here and add to them. In general, cargo revenue, Chubby, is probably a shade above 10% or so of typical airline revenue. And we're not talking about a cargo-specific or cargo business model airline. But I think 2020, cargo revenue, I think the numbers recently show that it's probably about three times what they would expect compared to normal years. And that's because, as Brendan said, I think capacity has been more restricted and rates have been able to go up a little bit more. And there's been more cargo to be shipped around in a way, particularly on the medical front.
So the first of the five things you need to know about the aviation industry is that vaccine transportation is important, but may not be enough to keep airlines afloat. Let's move on to the second thing on our list today and the main driver for the airline industry, passenger travel. Jeffrey, when do you think we'll see passenger travel resume to pre-COVID levels?
This is a matter for the crystal ball, in a way. If I had one in front of me, it would be much easier for all of us. But I think there still continues to be a general school of thought that we're looking at 23, perhaps, or 24, in terms of returning to pre-COVID or the 2019 levels, if at all. Because I think there's also an expectation that in terms of passenger volumes, there is likely to be a structural change in the sense of, will all passengers that used to travel return back to traveling in the frequency with which they did? But I think what is optimistic right now is the development and the arrival of the vaccine will perhaps open the way for an earlier recovery. May not be to the 2019 levels, but at least a more sustained picture for recovery. And I think there is a lot of expectation that the fourth quarter of this year would be when we could begin to see some sustained recovery, not in the way that we saw recovery in 2020 in a very choppy manner.
Brendan, what's your crystal ball telling you?
Yeah, well, like Jeffrey was saying, it's very hard to predict this. But generally, the consensus, and I agree with the consensus, is that it'll be a few years at least before we're back to pre-COVID levels. The question is, will the pre-COVID level really be achieved, or will they only get 90% of the way there or whatever because of a fundamental structural shift in the industry? And that kind of question is very difficult to have an answer right now. We just know that there's factors that we need to watch very closely in the next couple of years once the recovery starts to see whether we will actually get back to pre-COVID levels. Like Jeffrey was talking about, there is some optimism that we can have some significant numbers by the fourth quarter of this year, but a lot is still unknown about how much the vaccine will facilitate the resumption of international travel. Overall, I must say 2021 is not going to be an easy year at all.
But on a more positive note, as Brendan mentioned, certain domestic markets have been able to return to some decent levels of travel. If you look at China, for example, for sure domestic travel is close to, if not, I think there's an expectation to exceed 2019 levels, and the US have held up reasonably okay. But these are all markets where you have a decent domestic travel market. The other thing is that there are sufficient studies and evidence to suggest that when the opportunity comes, when borders reopened, there is a lot of pent-up leisure demand. When the Singapore-Hong Kong travel bubble was announced and you saw an uptick in terms of bookings and the wish to travel, and obviously it died very quickly once that bubble was suspended, but business travel is going to be a little bit behind. But what is uncertain is this development of the variant of COVID-19. And who knows, in 2021, what other variants may emerge.
Let's talk a little bit more about business travel, which is number 3 on our list today. Jeffrey, you mentioned that there are structural changes taking place and how pent-up tourist demand may return in a big way. What about business travel? Do you think it will look very different post-pandemic?
There's a strong expectation that it will look a little different. In our expectations here, having spoken with various stakeholders, intra-company travel, we can expect some significant fundamental adjustments there. But your business travel to visit your client, for example, or your business travel to kick off or to close a merger and acquisition transaction, that will still remain. I think you cannot take that away, particularly in certain cultures. That will continue to be significant. But I think some businesses are beginning to make their adjustments in terms of intra-company travel, where technology is able to be used as a reasonable and adequate substitute instead of traveling 12 hours for a three-hour meeting and then turning back around again. So we can expect those kind of changes to happen.
Brendan, the way we work and play has changed. What's your outlook for business travel?
So every time we have a recession, a global recession, there's always a reduction in business travel. There's companies cutting travel budgets. There's companies changing travel policies, which is fewer people allowed to fly business class and so forth, which inevitably affects the airlines. This is something that will happen. Companies now cut their travel budgets, obviously, for a year, even 2 years, just because no travel is allowed. And now they would have to bring those costs back into their budget once travel can resume. And some companies will be more aggressive at that because they'll maybe see an opportunity to get out there and sell. And others might be a little bit more cautious. So overall, it's really hard to say what the actual impact will be or put a number to it. But there will be a change. Certain types of business travel, like Jeffrey was saying, will definitely reduce, while other types of business travel will certainly remain. And the question is what will the overall equation look like, factoring in economic growth as well?
It will take longer than leisure travel, certainly, but you know whether that will occur eventually, hopefully it will, but we really don't know. And leisure travel is definitely will recover faster. There's a lot of pent-up demand, as Jeffrey was mentioning. If you look at, like, for example, this region of the world, Southeast Asia, there's a lot of new middle class, a lot of discretionary income among new middle class have driven a lot of the growth in recent years. But if the economy is really impacted by what's happened, a lot of that discretionary income could be wiped away, and we can see some impact on leisure travel as well.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Brendan. I just add to that. Also, I think we recognize there's a pent-up leisure demand. The question is also for people who used to travel for leisure four times a year, whether that will still be the case or whether this will be reduced by 50% as you manage your discretionary income better in the immediate aftermath of the crisis. But let me throw perhaps a bone of optimism to this, right? If we look at just as recently as 2018, where just around 4 billion passengers were carried around the world, and at that time, we were predicting that in 20 years' time, we'll be doubling the number of passengers or, you know, travelers to about 8 billion. I like to think that this number or these passengers, these travelers, are just not going to disappear. At some point, they're going to come back. It will take some time. May never hit the 8 billion in 20 years' time, but I think there's a huge number there that we can look forward to for travelers to return to the skies again.
I guess it'll take time for both leisure and business travelers to come back. So far on this edition of the 5 Things You Need to Know podcast, we have looked at how vaccine transportation, while important, is not a huge revenue driver for the airline industry. Second, recovery in passenger travel is a few years out, and in the best case, we may see a pickup in activity in the fourth quarter of this year. Thirdly, when it comes to business travel, there's a structural change and business travel will look very different post-pandemic. Now on to the fourth item on our 5 Things list today, fleet composition. I've been speaking with Jeffrey Goh, Chief Executive Officer of Star Alliance, and Brendan Sobey, Founder, Sobey Aviation. Jeffrey, with the recovery some time away, are airlines rejigging their fleet composition and are they cutting down their fleet size?
You will probably see a U-curve in terms of, you know, the usage of wide-body aircraft. But it's very dependent on the kind of markets that you are trying to serve. If your business model is long-haul travel, it's very difficult to get around with a single-aisle aircraft on a 10- or 12-hour flight.
I think a lot of airlines would like to reduce their fleets because they don't see demand coming back so quickly. And the strain of carrying excess aircraft is very heavy, very, very damaging potentially to the balance sheet. But it's not so easy just shed aircraft. As airlines restructure, they're working with the manufacturers and the leasing companies and other stakeholders to see what can be done. So a lot of airlines are successfully restructuring without necessarily cutting their fleet size or their fleet commitments. Maybe they're accelerating some phase out of older airplanes that would have gone in the next couple of years anyway, but they're not necessarily returning newer aircraft. Some of them would like to, but some of them are able to instead agree with leasing companies to reduce their rental rates. In some cases, extend out leases by a few years because they're not able to pay leases for the last year and maybe even 2 years or 3 years it'll take before they resume full payments of monthly lease payments. So in exchange, some of them have been extending their leases out. It's about sharing the pain and coming up with the best compromise between all the stakeholders. But it is very difficult, and there are some airlines that end up having to go into bankruptcy or other kind of court-led supervision in terms of restructuring. And then at that point, they do cancel some of their contracts and aircraft do come out. But so far, that's a minority of airlines.
Yeah, inevitably, I suppose there's a lot of hedging going on in terms of reconfiguring your aircraft fleet. Chubby, in that at this stage, whilst we can be great advocates of reopening the borders, how soon the borders will reopen is a function of your fleet structure, particularly for wide-body aircraft, long-haul aircraft. The sooner borders are open, the more clear in terms of planning for your wide-body long-haul aircraft. The longer this is dragged on, the greater the strain would be to be sitting on long-haul wide-body aircraft and not getting anywhere with it.
Yeah, and it's also important to note that domestic, while it helps in those countries that have a domestic market, it's just not enough in almost all cases. China might be an exception just because the domestic market there is so large. It accounts for 90% of total traffic. But most markets here in Southeast Asia, you look at any of the domestic markets, they're just not large enough to sustain any kind of recovery.
I guess a lot of planning in terms of which planes to keep or get rid of will really depend on how soon borders reopen. That brings us to the fifth and final item on our agenda today. How can we get air travel to resume besides waiting for a complete vaccine rollout?
I don't think we can wait for vaccination of everyone around the world to be completed before we hope that air travel will return, before borders are reopened. Pre-departure screening and testing needs to be the way forward, bolstered by arrival testing as a means around that blunt instrument of quarantine. What we are doing right now, in fact, is working with the likes of Boeing and Airbus and other stakeholders to consolidate medical data, medical evidence, to make the point that pre-departure testing, with or without arrival testing, is sufficient safeguard as a safe and reasonable way around quarantines. Alongside that, as the industry has been doing, which is to continue with the layers of protection of hygiene safety for travelers and customers, whether this is about personal protective equipment on board for customers or the requirement of flight attendants to be wearing personal protective equipment or a procedure to isolate the customer who doesn't feel well on board.
Certainly, testing is part of the facilitator for a resumption of air travel, particularly this year. There's opportunities to resume air travel even over the next 6 months, not to a very significant level, but to a slightly better level than we now have, particularly through mutual recognition of tests. Countries or governments recognizing each other's tests in terms of what tests to use, what constitutes a positive and negative. Because we've had a lot of setbacks in the last several months, countries just having their own system in place, basically, when it comes to testing, and there's just no consensus in the industry. There are opportunities for air travel bubbles. Unfortunately, the Singapore-Hong Kong bubble, for example, was delayed for obvious reasons, but there's other opportunities to get air travel bubbles going in this interim phase until a significant portion of the population is vaccinated. That's how you have air travel return. Like as Jeffrey was saying, you can't expect much air travel to occur when there's 14-day quarantine.
And I will just add to that also in that whilst I think we've been crying out loud really for more global coordination, particularly in terms of testing and screening protocols, another bone of optimism here is that more and more countries are adopting pre-departure testing, some of which are as a consequence of the new variant that we've been talking about. But you're seeing the US, Canada, UK accepting pre-departure testing, which never really did before. The only challenge and the only problem that we have right now is they haven't removed the quarantine requirements in spite of the pre-departure testing and in spite of being negative and still requiring the quarantine requirements. That doesn't help the recovery of air travel. This virus isn't going to go away anytime soon, if at all. And I think we need to learn to live with that and build systems and processes and protocols that allows us to continue living and get around it.
Let's hope there's more acceptance and uniformity when it comes to pre-departure testing so that we all can take to the skies soon. Brendan, Jeffrey, thank you very much for being on this podcast.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure joining the show.
I've been speaking with Jeffrey Goh, Chief Executive Officer of Star Alliance, and Brendan Sobey, Founder, Sobey Aviation. Thanks for listening and catch us again on the next 5 Things You Need to Know podcast by CNA's Money Mind team.